Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonya Rappaport.
And today, Sonya, we are talking about the 10th episode of Season 4, the 57th episode overall, Beyond Good and Evil, Part 3. Mm-hmm. We continue to inch ever closer, not only to the end of Beyond Good and Evil, but to the end of the X-Men series as a whole.
Well, we have a whole nother season ahead of us.
That's true.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch.
That's right. You never know when you're going to be blinked out of existence.
Mm-hmm. As we learn in this episode.
Right. And as we learn in other more relevant Marvel properties. Spoilers. Mm. But everyone knows what we're talking about. Yeah. Anyway. This is the continuation, the third episode in a four-part series, Beyond Good and Evil. We pick up where we left off last week, where essentially Cable has to steal a time machine to travel back in time to stop Apocalypse. That's often a theme in Cable's life. messing with time travel in order to do something, to right a wrong.
Yeah. You'd think he'd really be better at it by now.
Right. In general, let's catch people up just in case they forget. Okay. In this mini-series, Apocalypse stole Cable's original time travel cube, and he accidentally stumbled upon this place called the Axis of Time, where all time is controlled. It's some metaphysical place in the universe. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's located inside the time stone of the Infinity Gem. Mm-hmm. I'm just making that up. I have no idea. It's just some ridiculous place with like a control center. And then sort of adjacent to the Axis of Time is this like Axis of Time behind the scenes area with some time ribbons and time windows. And that's where our old pal Bishop has been trapped with a weird mysterious how would you describe him? A nymph?
A time jester.
A time jester. His name is Bender. Mm-hmm. And as was pointed out...
No relation to the robot.
Right. As was pointed out by a guest, Brian Cronin, he's kind of a ripoff of the genie from Aladdin.
Yeah.
A movie sort of made popular right before this episode was produced. So that's kind of what's going on. Oh, and Apocalypse is trying to kidnap all the psychics in the galaxy for some reason that we're not quite sure of yet. Mm-hmm. And to do this, he's hired all the villains in the X-Men universe to do so. We've seen Magneto and Sabretooth and Mr. Sinister and some others. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where we are. So as we discussed, Cable doesn't have his time machine. Time travel's been outlawed by all the world governments. However, as Cable pointed out in the last episode, that every world government held on to a time machine just in case, much like how they all held on to a nuclear bomb after nuclear disarmament in the 21st century, an event yet to take place in the real world, mm-hmm. in the real 21st century. So with that in mind, Cable has a new plot to steal a time machine. You know, I always assumed my memory from being a child was that, especially when he's talking about every government has a time machine. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to America's government.
I thought so too. Not from when I was a child, but from the last episode. I just assumed that he was American, so he'd be stealing the American time machine.
Yeah.
But
I mean, in the time machine he steals, it's called the Gray Malkin, which is quite, like, it's not Egyptian sounding, is it?
The Gray Malkin?
Yeah.
That's what it's called?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's some Egyptian reference, but anyway, the point is he's stealing a time machine from the Egyptian government, whoever that is. Mm-hmm. He's still in Cairo in the year 3999.
Yeah.
The far-off fabulous year.
Yeah.
So
it's
I guess
always like a little bit of a mystery with time travel, because it seems like anytime someone wants to travel in time, they also appear in whatever place they mean to go to magically, mm-hmm. even if it's different from where they started out. So
right.
Time machines should really be called time and space machines.
Right. Well, that's an old funny criticism I read of Back to the Future.
Uh-huh.
It's like, how does Doc Brown's car account for the position of the Earth when it travels back in time? Because it's like, yeah. If it's riding on a road, if you pick a random point in time, the Earth is liable to be on the other side of the sun when the car arrives. So the car would be like left floating in space.
Well, no, it's not. The Earth is going to be in the same position if it's the same. Oh, if it's a different date.
Right, yes. Yeah. Like, just date, imagine all different dates. The Earth's always going to be in a different...
That's right. I have read that criticism before, too. That's not even what I mean. What I mean is...
Right. Well, like, that's what I'm talking about.
No. That's also true.
Right.
But what I mean is, in these X-Men escapades, they do a lot of time travel, and it seems like no problem if they need to travel between Cairo and New York they just use the same time blip to also travel from Cairo to New York or vice versa or whatever.
Right, you know, I see what you're saying.
Any place around the world.
They pick a location and it goes to the location too.
Yeah.
Whereas the time machine in Back to the Future is limited to the location of for where time travels.
Yes.
So Marty uses it in California. It's going to stay in California.
Right.
You know, and that's also not taking in other factors to, like, not just the location of the Earth in its orbit, mm-hmm. but the way it, like, might wobble slightly on its axis as well. Like, the time machine wouldn't necessarily appear on a smooth road. It would also, like, appear underground.
That, like, a cool
or,
time
like, 100 feet in the air.
Has, like, a stabilization mechanism that prevents, like, that type of error from happening.
All the nonsense exposition Doc Brown probably gives in the margins of those movies, like, when he's talking about the technology on the time machine probably accounts for all that stuff, you know.
Maybe.
Like, there's things that the flux capacitor does, like you're suggesting. I mean, there's a lot of circuits and switches on that thing, so.
What I'm talking about is the X-Men time travel.
Fine.
And how, for some reason, they can just, like, transport themselves to wherever they need to be, not just whenever they need to be.
Okay.
So, it's convenient.
Right. Well, my point, and not to keep going back to the Future, but is that it's a trope across all time travel movies and genres, is that there's all these magical extra things happening other than just time traveling.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
One of the many reasons time travel cannot be a reality.
Right. Well,
suffice it to say.
Yeah. I mean, do you believe time travel is impossible? It'll never be...
Correct. Impossible.
Totally impossible.
Yeah.
For time travel, though, you're a fan of, in favor of.
No.
Really? That's, like, almost been proven as true.
Oh, that it could be real?
Right, yeah.
I don't know all the science backing it, but
yes,
yeah,
they... Do.
Well...
The science is that if you travel, like, close to the speed of light, like...
Oh, in that way, yes.
Yeah, like, in a sense, you're forward... Right, you're not, like, really traveling through... You're not picking a location in the future and just ending there instantaneously. You have to travel at a ridiculous speed.
I feel like we talked about relativity, like, in the last podcast just briefly, but here it comes up again. Yes, the rules of relativity mean that... Relative time travel is possible, yes.
Right, right.
But
relative time
in
travel.
Talking about, like, creating
reverse time travel,
a device that, like, lets you skip time periods and stuff like that, I don't know. Let's say never say never, because
well, yeah,
in 4,000 years, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Like, 4,000 years ago on Earth, they never would have imagined half of the stuff we take for granted today, just looking around our apartment, looking at a microwave.
Right.
Of all things. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, forget things about 4,000 years ago, like 40 years ago,
right.
Cell phones and internet and all that.
Well, no, actually, now you're talking about 40 years ago, that cell phones and internet do not seem that far off. That's how old we are.
Yeah.
40 years ago, it's almost like those things probably existed. In some form. A better word is like 60 years ago. A better time frame.
All right, fine.
Anyway, I'm just saying it's weird. We're getting old. So back to this episode.
yes.
So Cable's busting into the Egyptian time machine base. So I guess the Egyptians got their own time machine as well. Kind of funny.
Well, he said every government.
That's true, but...
So.
Yeah.
But why do they choose Egypt? I mean...
Well, they're in Egypt in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Cable's busting into the time travel Egyptian military base. His team is trying to shut the power down so he can get past the energy grid or something. And his son is fighting off robots on a mountain. His son is sort of cornered and looks like he's in a lot of trouble. And Bishop just sort of has to... Not Bishop, Cable... just sort of has to carry on with the mission,
mm-hmm.
even though his son's in danger.
Well, his son tells him, like, go, I'll catch up or whatever.
Right, and also the whole point of time travel is he changed the past and future and gets saved. So Cable manages his way through this, like, complex base fighting against a bunch of autonomous Egyptian robots.
Mm-hmm.
And at first they're pretty lame, these robots. They're just shooting randomly and they can't hit him, and he's blowing them up pretty easily. But the one thing they capture in this episode, and in the show in general, that I think is really cool, there's a lot of sort of robot horror.
Mm.
You know, so Bishop, like, I keep calling him Bishop, Cable makes a daring... like, jump through a closing door to get to the escalator down to the time, wherever the time machine is.
Mm-hmm.
But the robots, like, wedge themselves in this closing door and they're still shooting at him. And then they manage to tear the door open and pursue him.
Yeah.
And this show does a really good job of showing how scary robots can be. They're sort of like that this like unstoppable will of mission.
Yeah,
and
it's really like a robot horror film.
Yeah, we've seen that before with the robot Nimrod, who's real scary. That even after you blow him up, his circuits reassemble themselves.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like an interesting aspect. I guess they kind of went there with the Age of Ultron in Avengers 2, because Ultron's this robot and they have to fight, and he's really like impossible to kill and scary. But it's like all this technology Tony Stark's inventing, this nanobite self-creating Iron Man technology, seems like there'd be a real downside if some robots or AI, some rogue AI got a hold of it. You'd never be able to stop an army of Iron Man. I mean, and that is the plot of Avengers 2, but and they managed to stop it.
Right.
But still, it's kind of scary. That's also,
like, there's a lot of, like, AI robot movies that are like that.
The Matrix.
Know? It's, like, the real pessimistic view of, artificial intelligence. Yeah. I think, as a whole, Marvel likes to take a little bit more of an optimistic view of the future. So they choose to play it the other way.
And of AI. A lot of the AI in the Marvel Universe is real benevolent and good. Yeah. And has, like, a witty sense of humor.
You have Jarvis.
And Friday.
And
there's a million other examples.
Yeah.
I mean, Cerebro to an extent.
Yeah.
Although, in the comics, Cerebro ends up self-actualizing and becomes an evil robot.
Hmm.
In the hands of Joss Whedon in the comics run that he did. Yeah, that, it actually, in a weird way, I think the Ultron movie was just playing on themes he introduced in his X-Men run of Astonishing X-Men, of self-actualized AI and it being scary and wanting to destroy its creator and stuff. He pretty much, I'm sure, like, that was, he just stole that pitch when pitching it to Marvel again, and they're like, yeah, let's just do that. So, I guess it's a theme that Joss Whedon was into. Anyway.
I think it's also a theme that people in real life are very afraid of. It's something that people, the audience is probably really connect to that idea.
Well, Elon Musk keeps ringing that alarm bell about AI.
The dangers of AI.
It's really scary. And Mark Zuckerberg, he is in this weird like Twitter fight with Mark Zuckerberg over it. Because Zuckerberg, the Facebook guy, is like, oh, there's nothing to worry about with AI. Because his Facebook Labs doing like countless experiments with artificial intelligence, and Musk is like, you're a dangerous idiot.
Yeah.
And you know, and I tend to probably agree with Musk that Zuckerberg's a moron when it comes to just blindly pumping billions of dollars into artificial intelligence and hoping for the best.
Yeah, I don't really know too much about what Facebook is doing with AI other than like shopping bots and stuff like that.
Oh, they're just tracking our like habits and things.
Right, yeah. Well, that is known. But I would tend to err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
I've seen too many of those scary movies.
We've seen too many X-Men in Marvel films. Okay, so, right, so there's some. The robots are after Cable, but he still manages to evade them. He descends down into to where the time machine is, and it's a really. You know, compared to Cable's time machine cube, which is about, like, the size of a Duracell battery that pops out of his robot arm, this time machine is a ginormous, like, spaceship structure that looks like a flying crab.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Right, it's called the Gray Malkin. He breaks into it, I guess, for a thing that looks like the size of the Starship Enterprise. It's amazing that
it's smaller.
It is, but it's, like, the size of a big spaceship.
Okay.
Right, it's, like, bigger than the U.S. space shuttle. All
right.
Right? It's kind of interesting that he can fly it all by himself. I find that kind of bizarre, that only one man is needed to operate it.
Mm.
And it's funny when he's traveling through time, like, the view screen of the time machine, it's just showing the years countdown on a big on a big screen.
Gray Malkin is a thing.
What is it? It's some reference to something.
It's a reference to the opening scene of Macbeth.
Oh, there you go.
One of the three witches planning to meet with Macbeth suddenly announces, "I come, Grey Malkin." The witch is responding to the summons of her familiar or guardian spirit, which is embodied in the form of a cat. So for Shakespeare, Grey Malkin literally means grey cat.
All right.
That doesn't add as much meaning as I thought it
would. Well, it's a nice literary reference. Again, the ex-TAS writer showing their nice touchstones of... those types of things, you know, the bestial side of intellect on this show. I'm sure Beast would appreciate that reference.
Right.
But anyway, so he's traveling back in time. Apocalypse from the Axis of Time, he's able to manipulate reality in a way that's really powerful now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess anyone attempting to travel through time anyway. So he does something, he causes a guidance failure on Cable's ship. And as a result, Cable lands outside the X-Mansion in the 20th century. and alarming the X-Men. So, I mean, Cable's plan was to go back to ancient Egypt to destroy Apocalypse's Lazarus Pit, where he regenerates himself. Mm-hmm. He says it takes him a couple hundred years to regenerate himself. I think I heard that correctly. Does it take him a couple hundred years to regenerate himself, or does he need it to live a couple more hundred years?
I don't know. I caught the part where they said every 100 years he goes right, back
every
to
few
regenerate.
Hundred years he goes back to
no,
regenerate.
No, every 100 years he goes
no,
back.
No, I think they said few hundred.
Oh, really?
Well, it doesn't matter. But okay. Right.
Anyway, that's the time scale we're working with. Hundreds
yeah.
of years.
Yeah. But I like to think that when he regenerates himself, he goes away for a few hundred years. Uh-huh. If only because it doesn't make sense that he's not constantly present in human history.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like a theme that they subtly put across that Apocalypse retreats. So maybe he has to go regenerate and like he drops out of history for a while. Mankind can rebuild itself after he conquers it.
Yeah.
It's like it seems like he's, you know, there's an episode where Archangel's researching him. And he alludes to the fact that he's, you know, tormented the Chinese and the ancient Indians, like Indians from India, and, mm-hmm. you know, things of that nature. So he's, like, goes around the globe in the ancient times and reemerges and probably has to go back.
Right. This is actually another, like, sort of literary reference. I mean, X-Men is not the only place where we see or hear of Lazarus Pits, but Lazarus himself is, like, a character. I don't know if character is the right word from the Bible. Where, like, he's the guy that Jesus raises from the dead, according to...
Right, yeah. It,
you know,
yeah, it's the
biblical story.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the same... Anyway. It's the same exact same reference used in Batman with yeah. Ra's al Ghul.
Right, yeah.
Is it Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul?
I don't know. I think we had this debate last...
We did.
We spoke about this.
We spoke about... Okay, yeah. Anyway. So... Professor X, you know, so he Cable meets the X-Men. Professor X tries to explain to him that their missions are, you know, that they're related. But Cable tells Professor X that he's being bored by him and that he just wants to go back in time and, you know, kill Apocalypse and that have be the end of it.
Yeah.
And I just like, to me, that's like classic Marvel genius. That exists to stay, where they, if they have to do some boring exposition, they undercut it with a funny joke.
Right.
Like, for the people who are bored by the exposition.
And they just let you know, like, yeah, we know this is boring for some people.
Right. Like, but some people like it. But then it, so it creates, yeah. like, a nice little, like, you know, you pick your side.
Right.
Are you a nerd or are you, like, the action guy that, you know, wants to go fight?
Right.
And it's just, it's fun like that.
Yeah. Cable definitely is very rash. And, like, depending on your personality, you might agree with Professor X that you have to, like, be slow in plotting and take your time.
Right. Or Professor X explains the interesting details about
right.
things.
Or you might agree with Cable and be like, no, let's just go and
right.
get some business done, whatever
right.
it is.
And,
have we spoken about Cable? I don't know if we talked about this before. His, like, I don't know if they're tattoos or what, the markings around his
right.
eyes that are very reminiscent of the Shi'ar
yeah.
people. Are they, like, Shi'ar tattoos?
I don't
or?
Think so. I think it's probably, like, I don't know what it is, but he's got, like, a cybernetic eyeball.
So it's related to his cybernetics?
It might be related to his cybernetics that he's got the weird marking around his eyes.
Uh-huh.
So I can't answer that for certain. We'll have to see an X-Task super fan to ask about Cable's appearance.
Okay.
And he's got a similar thing going on in the Deadpool 2 movie.
Yeah.
They highlight his crazy eyeball.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know, it's interesting because also his eyeball also shines when he's using his telekinesis power. So that's his mutant power.
Right.
Which I guess he inherited from his mother, Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm.
An alternate Jean Grey, I think, from a different timeline or something. Like, Cable's the son of Scott and Jean from an alternate timeline, I
yeah.
think, who's sent to the future because there's a techno-organic virus or something. And they're hoping that by sending him to the future, he's cured. Speaking of nerds, we have Beast. He's sort of like, Beast is putting together what happened to Bishop. He's
mm-hmm.
explaining to Shard. His theory is that Bishop was traveling through time and that a more powerful time traveler knocked him off course. Because the more powerful time traveler, in this case Apocalypse, like created a backwash in the time stream. So that pushed Bishop off to the like axis of time back room.
How would Beast know that?
I have no idea, but he's got a computer graphic showing like a Silver Surfer type person traveling through time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's pretty insane that Beast picks up on that. You know, and that's actually some bullshit I think ripped off in the X-Men movies as well. In the Days of Future Past movie directed by Bryan Singer, Beast has a similar scene where he explains the effects of time travel and time waves and things. And he says he does... I forget how he, like, figured it out in the movie. But he uses, like... there's something involving where he's got, like, he says he has some kind of machine that's tape recording all television broadcasts on a 24-hour basis. Mm-hmm. He's like, all five channels, because, like, back then there was no cable, including PBS. And then there's an episode of Star Trek playing. But anyway, the point is, like, Beast, there's, like, a very similar scene in that movie, and I'm almost certain it's a direct pull from this episode, too. This is all going with my grand theory that Bryan Singer knows nothing about the X-Men outside of the animated series. And here, another ripoff point. And then, just in general, we talked about it obviously a lot last week when we reviewed Avengers Infinity War. Mm-hmm. This series in general, this mini-series, has so much that in common with with the current MCU-type movie. The epicness, the humor, the set pieces. There's just, like, a lot, like, that this laid the groundwork for, that it almost feels like the same Marvel brain trust that was behind the X-Men animated series, and I know it isn't, that they like are the ones making the movies to this day. Mm. In a weird way,
well, they influenced everything that came after, as we know,
but but the question is, where does the influence, you know, like, how do you draw the lines of influence? Mm-hmm. Because Bryan Singer was influenced by the cartoon, obviously. Mm-hmm. He admitted as much. And he made the first X-Men movies, which, in a way, laid the groundwork for the future MCU movies unconnected to the Fox studio. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the people making the Disney Marvel movies are looking to the X-Men cartoon as, like, for tone and for, like, pacing and for the right way to do cameos. You know what I'm saying? I feel like there is a Marvel magic that comes from the comics originally, obviously. And both the cartoon and the current movies both draw from that same source of magic. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's just strange.
So then it's not necessarily linear then.
Right.
It's not that comic creates cartoon creates movie. It's that...
Which it was. That was the case.
It was, but now I'm saying it could also be the case that the comics influence cartoon and those same comics directly influence the movie.
Yeah.
And the flavor of the comics is so strong. Mm-hmm. That, like, you get a similar tone in both branches,
but,
you know?
But to my bizarre theory that the cartoon is more influential than people think,
uh-huh.
Kevin Feige, the guy who's the brain power behind all the MCU movies right now,
yeah,
he was a producer on the first X-Men.
Okay, so there's the answer to your question.
Well, I don't know. I'm not saying... But just because Bryan Singer watched all the X-Men cartoons doesn't necessarily mean that Kevin Feige did and absorbed them in the way that Bryan Singer did.
But it's all just, like, out there in the universe, right. Everything influencing each other. It's, yeah, like a web at this point. So yeah, what's the point in, like, trying to extricate it all, you know?
I just find it interesting because, like I said, the popularity of the cartoon,
uh-huh,
led Fox to greenlight the first X-Men movie.
Mm-hmm.
First X-Men movie heavily influenced by the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
First X-Men movie also heavily influences the course of superhero movies going forward, too, yeah, as well. So there is a fairly strong link, and the cartoon's really at the root of a lot of it. So, anyway, and my only point bringing that up again for the millionth time is that, like, this Beyond Good and Evil's mini-epic is just another great example of how the cartoon, like, was cinematic and was had the Marvel pixie dust before anything. And it's just really cool to see, even in the year 2018,
mm-hmm,
you know, 15 years, 20 years after the show came out.
Yep.
Okay, so back to the episode. They, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do. They have Sabretooth captured from the previous episode. He's just a lackey of Magneto, or Apocalypse in this case. And I just love when they bust into where Sabretooth is being captured. Cyclops is like, "You're too stupid to plan this on your own." And Sabretooth just sort of grumbles at him. He's like, "Yeah." And Cyclops, "We're not going to get anywhere with this guy." And Wolverine's like, "Leave it to me." And then they all leave. And I just like that it's bad cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
It's not even Cyclops is not the good cop. He's like, "You're a fucking piece of shit, Sabretooth. Tell us what you know." And this is a thing they've done with before. They show how tough Wolverine is. He immediately unhandcuffs Sabretooth and they start fighting.
Yeah.
And Wolverine is so confident that he could kick the shit out of Sabretooth that there's not even worth showing that action sequence, uh-huh, of them fighting and who might win.
Right.
It's just such a joke. Like, Wolverine is completely so far evolved beyond Sabretooth that it's not even a question.
Uh-huh.
So, cut to a few moments later, we get a shot of that Lazarus chamber. They explain, as we said before, how it works. And now it's also worth noting that Archangel sort of joined the team at this point.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously very interested in bringing down Apocalypse. Once he hears Cable side of the story and the plan just to kill him, Archangel's all on board. He's like, yeah, let's just kill him.
Yeah.
At last, somebody's speaking common sense.
Right.
But then Wolverine tosses Sabretooth into the Cerebro room, the planning room, and he says... he lays out the general basics of Apocalypse's plan. He's just trying to kidnap all the psychics. He doesn't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor X is like, well, how are we going to find out more details? And somebody says, I think Archangel's like, well, you know what to do, which is essentially mind rape him. And Professor X reminds us yet again that he does not like to enter the thoughts of others without their consent.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the more I think about it, I've been making fun of it, like, throughout the series.
Well, the only reason...
It's a good lesson to tell kids.
It is good, but also, like, the only reason it's even a joke is because, like, sometimes he's concerned about it and sometimes he's not.
That's true, yeah.
And then when he actually does it, it's not, like...
Not that helpful often.
No.
I mean, in this case, like, it's funny. Like, what he pulls from Sabretooth's mind, this is the exact quote... He says, portals, clocks, time-related images. It all makes sense.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I mean, all he gets from Sabretooth is that, I guess that he's Apocalypse is at the axis of time, or that he's manipulating time somehow. So, but again, like I said, I was making fun of Professor X's, like, goody-two-shoes about not entering the minds of others. But we've seen from shows like Legion and even in Jessica Jones, like, when psychics... use their powers for ill good, it is not good.
For ill gains.
Ill gains, it is not good. They are so overly powered that the things they could do to people and the way they can manipulate them is scary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we saw that in Jessica Jones with David Tennant playing, the character's name is escaping me. Was it Kilgrave, perhaps?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's Kilgrave, because I confuse him with Killmonger from Black Panther.
Yeah.
But anyway, Kilgrave, he's a guy that if he speaks, he can just make you do whatever he wants.
Right.
And they show it to, like, a disturbing effect, where he can, like, cut off your own arm, and the person, like, they know they don't want to, they're crying, but they're like, here they are hacking off their own arm. That was, like, one of the most disgusting scenes in the show. But it's, like, other stuff he does, too. You know, it's like, be my slave. And these, like, people they just meets on the street, they're, like, you know, cooking food, like, all day and, like, scrubbing the floors, and they can't stop themselves even though they're hungry and tired and don't want to be doing it.
Yeah.
And they also can't complain either, because he says, like, don't complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're just, like, forced to shut up. And it's, like, so scary. Like, that was the creepy show.
Yeah.
That was really a show creepy. That was really good to watch once.
Yeah.
And then you never want to watch again.
Right. Well, now there's season two, so...
There is. I'm not interested in season two. I mean, a lot of those Netflix shows went downhill for me, but... It was funny enough, we saw Luke Cage being filmed in our neighborhood, which is...
We think it was Luke Cage.
I know it was Luke Cage. I talked to some guy in the production staff, and I sort of got it out of him.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't let him know I worked for a Marvel-related podcast.
Right, yeah.
But you know, I mean, it was nothing, like, too secretive revealed. They were just at some Chinese restaurant in our neighborhood, and I was like, oh, he had, like, a Marvel jacket on. I was like, oh, what are you doing here? He's like, well, I shouldn't tell you, but it's Luke Cage, season two. I was like, oh, cool.
Why shouldn't he tell you?
I guess, I mean, I don't know, because maybe he was worried that, like, I would ask him more about spoilers or something.
Oh.
I didn't. I was just like, we were both waiting for Chinese food. He was getting it for the production team.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Jessica Jones, really disturbing. It shows you, like, what a psychic addict, because Professor X essentially has all those powers, too. He could just speak at people, and he can make them do whatever they want.
Right.
So it's a good thing he's, like, a force for good and not a psychopath.
Yep.
Sabretooth, you know, he doesn't reveal too much to the X-Men, but anyway, Professor X is convinced that they have to go back in time and kill Apocalypse, no matter what the cost. So they all gather aboard the Gray Malkin time travel machine. They're going to travel back to Cairo, the year 1200 BC, right after Apocalypse finishes his Lazarus Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
I guess here I was a little concerned. The X-Men have no concern for the butterfly effect. You know, killing a figure as big as Apocalypse 2,000 years in the past would surely mess up the future.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, though. They're trying to leverage the butterfly effect, aren't they?
Really? Like,
influence the future for good by getting rid of Apocalypse.
Yeah, but you're removing Apocalypse from the timeline. It'll mess up, like, everyone's life. Like, will the X-Men even be born if They take Apocalypse out of the equation.
I think the point is that they don't care if they themselves are born, because... Well, they're assuming that removing Apocalypse from existence is going to have such a positive impact, like some.
Well, they have to protect the timeline in general. Like they're out to protect the continuity of time.
But how could they know what the real continuity of time is?
They can't. I'm agreeing with you in saying that it's more important to protect the fabric of space-time than it is the continuity that they're all accustomed to.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So I think there is they don't say that explicitly. I think it would have been more interesting if they did. Uh-huh. The stakes would have been higher. It just seems more like they're off willy-nilly to just kill him.
Right.
You know, take him out of the picture, and that it's not going to change anything.
Yeah. I mean, you pointed this out while we were watching it, but it's something I've often thought in these types of time travel situations, is like, why do they choose that moment to go back to if they have control over when they arrive? Why don't they arrive when Apocalypse is, like, young and, like, not strong yet?
Doesn't have, like, a whole fortress that they have to invade.
Hasn't built a Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
Like, is it, like, against their moral code? Because, like, basically they're going to kill him. So if they, like, attack Apocalypse as a baby, imagine what that looks like. That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Like, is it that then they're saddled with guilt for having killed a baby? That
it might just be that they don't know where he is. Maybe they just know where he is with the pyramid. It's, like, hard to track him down. You'd just be traveling randomly anywhere.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's all excellent points. And we'll talk more about that going forward a little bit. There's some more confusing things about this pyramid. But also, I want Apocalypse can watch this all from the axis of time.
Yeah.
And he's almost like the puppet master pulling the strings. And I like this one line he says where, very menacingly, the end game has begun. And I don't know. I just think that's interesting. It's a badass thing to say. Mm-hmm. But also, there's a lot of rumors on the internet that Avengers 4, the title's not yet been revealed, but it's... supposedly might be called Endgame. So again, ding ding ding, another weird parallel. The parallels are just they're too much for me. They're back in Cairo in 1200 BC. I love the way it's drawn. They show it sort of like semi-accurately, in the sense that the pyramids are, they're not like mounds of just like sandy colored stone
yet.
Right. Yeah, they've got
Their shiny facade and the golden tops.
The golden tips, yeah. And we get a little backstory from Storm. You know, she reveals again that she's from Egypt, essentially. Although, really, the backstory of Storm is, I think her mother is from Egypt.
We see her backstory? Wasn't she in Kenya or somewhere further south?
This is where I'm a bit confused. So, this is what I know about Storm's backstory. Her father is American. He was a photojournalist or something.
Uh-huh.
He travels to Africa, and he meets Storm's mother, who I think Storm's mother is some sort of royalty.
Okay.
Right? And I'm not sure if she's either from Kenya or Egypt. I think from Kenya, but they're in Egypt at some point. Anyway, then they fly back to New York. Storm's raised in Harlem for a few years. Then I think they fly back. This is where I think they go back to Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And in Egypt... her whole family's, like, there's a war going on, and, like, some bombs fall in the hotel they're staying at, and her parents are killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Storm becomes an orphan in Egypt.
Oh.
And then the story goes, part of the story is that she's, like, a street urchin under the influence of the Shadow King.
Mm-hmm.
It's where she meets Gambit as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think she stumbles across Professor X, too, around that time, because he's battling the Shadow King.
Yeah.
And that's all sort of retconned into the story later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not... originally has presented, but then the story goes that she wanders Africa as she becomes a teenager with her powers, and she ends up in Kenya.
Oh,
and then she becomes like a storm goddess for like a small tribe or something.
Right.
And then Professor X finds her again and recruits her for the X-Men.
Okay.
So here she talks about like Egypt a little bit. The house is where she's from, and she says it's more beautiful in the past than it. Isn't that what she says? She said, I always found this land beautiful.
Yeah.
Right. So... she's sort of reflecting. Again, it's interesting to point out that Storm was slated to die in this miniseries until Fox ordered more episodes and they had to keep her alive.
Mm.
I would not have been a fan of killing off Storm for the series.
No.
Not at all. Although, you know, it would have been a heroic end, obviously, for that character, but still, come on. There's another funny line by Cable. I'm not sure where it comes in. I guess the X-Men are talking... about, like, why they have to stop Apocalypse. I like Cable. He says, who cares? He's pure evil, and that's why he has to go. Mm-hmm. And then Beast is sort of, to counter that, he reflects on, like, well, you know, if Apocalypse is pure evil, like, perhaps, like, we can't truly kill him, you know, because the universe needs balance between good and evil, balance of all things.
Right.
And, Cable's like, I'll worry about that when, later, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point by Cable, you know. You have to stop evil. You can't spare evil just because it's going to reemerge. Yeah, true. It is going to reemerge. It's mm-hmm. It's always going to come back.
Yeah.
So will good, hopefully. Right? So
the fight is, would you say, beyond good and evil?
Yes, it is. Right. Yeah. That's funny. They do keep, like, in every episode, there is a moment where they, like, reflect on the theme of beyond good and evil. Like, in the last few episodes, we saw Apocalypse does a lot of reflecting with his philosophy, saying, like, I'm not malevolent.
Uh-huh.
You know, I believe in weird philosophies, you know, about, like, evolution or the survival of the strongest or something. So, right, there's a lot of these, like, this show's awesome. I mean, that's all there is to it.
No, I mean, I like it because it's a strong way to bring back the theme. They just remind you every time, like, every episode.
Right.
That, like, this is what's going on, but they don't, like, I don't know. They don't...
It's subtle.
Expression I'm looking for. Yeah, right.
It's well written. They weave it in, like, beautifully, you know. It's very good for 19 minutes. This episode was 19 minutes. And then they, you know, they arrive at Apocalypse's Lazarus Pyramid. They're confronted by a sort of an ancient group of the Four Horsemen, which is a cool theme that Apocalypse always recreates the Four Horsemen, whatever era he's in.
Yeah.
So they have to fight them off. It's a pretty neat fight scene. I think it's the players we have in the past are Storm, Gambit, Cable, Wolverine, Professor X, Cyclops, and Beast.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of split into two teams. They're fighting the Four Horsemen. I like when we get the main X-Men theme pumping in a fight.
Yeah.
It's very adrenaline zapping.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just see the X-Men really getting to work with that music.
Gets you really amped up.
Yeah. man, they got it. Disney gods, Kevin Feige, whoever. When you redo the X-Men, bring back the theme.
Music.
I mean, come on. It's iconic. No one, everyone knows what it is, and it's a good orchestral score, I think. I think you could do it orchestrally very well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the show is always that, like, techno guitar, like, style. I don't think they ever really orchestrated it in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they had, like, they brought in, like, the London Symphony to, like, do it. But you could, right?
Sure.
So, I love the X-Men theme. Then there, Cable and Wolverine, Professor X are wandering in the pyramid. There's booby traps. Cable doesn't trust Wolverine's nose. Big mistake. He almost falls into a pit of spikes. Beast has a funny line saying, well, obviously, Apocalypse changed the booby traps over 5,000 years. Because Cable thinks he's a big expert on all the traps in the palace there.
Yeah.
Then the Four Horsemen retreat from fighting Cyclops and Gambit on the outside to the inside. They fight the other X-Men. Cable gets wounded in the fight. The X-Men push forward into the main Lazarus chamber, which looks kind of cool. It's got, like, sparkling energy.
Yeah.
Beast comments that the pyramid's a large energy collector that re-energizes Apocalypse, you know? And that's something they capture in the X-Men Apocalypse movie as well, that the pyramid, in the beginning of that movie, the pyramid, it harnesses, like, the sun's energy and shoots it through, like, some weird obelisk thing and... Mm-hmm. It comes out as, like, molten gold or something. It pours into the veins of Apocalypse. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something weird. So that's, like, a nice... I like that ancient Egyptian, like, technology things. Pretty cool. Again, might be a tad bit culturally insensitive, but the way Marvel takes, like, interesting historical things and futurizes them or technoizes them or magicifies them is really cool. They do it with, like, ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
There's things that are going on in ancient China. You know what I mean? Just like, you know, like, all the crazy conspiracy theories you might have thought, like, they all turn out to be real in the Marvel Universe. Like,
right.
And it extends, in, like, into the religious realm as well, where it's like, oh, you know, the Norse gods, they're actually real.
Right.
You know? And then even, like, the Greek gods are real to an extent. Things like that. It's like, but the way they present it, it's always like there's some skeptic who can't possibly think they're real. Oh, it's a myth. It's a legend. But then some, like, smarter person who's really done their research, like, conclusively proves to that person, like, no, it is real. The legends were true.
Yeah.
And beyond the legends just being true, and we're all, there's, like, some, like, interesting angle of technology or of just, like, interesting drama narrative that, like, draws you in even further.
It's very smart storytelling, I think, actually, because, like, if it's done right, you know, like, there's a reason that all of these legends have lived on till today,
yeah.
which is, like, they're complex characters yeah. with, like, great stories yeah. behind them yeah. and, like, sometimes, you know, like, good morals to teach
right.
and stuff like that. So, like, why not?
It's Marvel's touchstone. It's the way they are always trying to combine realism with fantasy.
Right.
And that, like, the whole premise of any Marvel story is it's like, hey, kids, imagine the real world, but you got bit by a radioactive spider, now you're Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, kids of the 1940s, you're a weakling, but you want to fight the Nazis. The government's going to put you in a secret program and turn you into Captain America.
Right.
Like, so it's always like that premise. And it's always reflected in all the little details. It's like, hey, like, in, like, for instance, in the 70s comics of Marvel, it's... Like, it's almost like all that... It's always, like, all that stuff, it happened in the past, all this crazy shit, but the present day of, like, the X-Men just walking around Greenwich Village in 1978, it's the Greenwich Village you knew from 1978. It's not been radically altered by, you know, Galactus having emerged 10 years earlier in the 60s with the Fantastic Four.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just, like, always the present day.
Yeah.
That's another little magic trick they pull, too, where it's not, like... People, like, acknowledge that the events of the past happened, but they always ground it in the reality of whatever the present is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. It's like a neat little narrative trick.
Yeah.
It's cool to, like, discover these, like, weird Marvel structural storytelling things that probably were all invented accidentally by Stan Lee and whoever else and Jack mm-hmm. Kirby, right? You know, like, they just didn't even, like, think twice about it, but it was just brilliant, like, storytelling.
Good choices, yeah.
All right, so we're coming in on the end here. They confront Apocalypse, the ancient Apocalypse, who's kind of cool without his celestial armor. He's got his sort of Egyptian garb on, but it turns out to be Mystique all along,
mm-hmm.
and it's a trap. Apocalypse then time warps Professor X out of the X-Men group, knocks out the other X-Men via this time warp because he's trying to capture all the psychics, and he compares this to chess, saying, I've captured the king.
Yeah.
Because I guess Professor X, top psychic. What I thought was weird is Mystique is pretending to be Apocalypse, right?
Mm-hmm.
But where is the real Apocalypse from this time period? Just elsewhere? Or did Apocalypse warn his previous self and mm-hmm. say, like, hey, previous self, I'm...
Get out of here.
Yeah, like, go hide. Like, I don't know. Or is he, like, in a different part of the chamber or something? I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe Apocalypse can manipulate the past, too, by controlling the axis of time.
Yeah.
So, like, another sort of, like, minor inconsistency. That always struck me as a kid. Like, where is the actual Apocalypse in this scenario?
Of that time,
like, why
aren't
they running
yeah.
into him?
Oh, I really didn't think about that.
Right. And then that's the cliffhanger that ends part three.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're going to get to the really, for me, the really fun stuff where Apocalypse explains this entire insane plot in episode four.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talk about relativity. The most pseudo discussion ever of relativity and time concepts you'll ever get in a kid's TV show. And it's perfect. I haven't watched it in years now, but I can't wait to re-listen to it.
Get excited, you philosophy majors out there.
Yeah, you brain-damaged comic book philosophy major fans. So that's Beyond Good and Evil Part 3. An excellent episode again. I mean, you know, like a little... the past two episodes have been truncated a little bit for time, I thought, in a weird way. A little shorter than your normal episode.
Uh-huh.
But still... interesting nonetheless.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I like this story arc a lot.
Right, and I think part four ends very satisfyingly, so we'll see.
Great.
I want to say, before we go, a little off topic.
Okay.
I can't recommend Cobra Kai enough to all the Karate Kid fans out there.
A little off topic.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a nostalgia thing, right?
Okay, yeah.
That's our primary trade here, right? I thought the trailers for that show looked terrible,
uh-huh.
and I'm a huge Karate Kid fan. I've obviously watched all the movies many times, although I've never seen the one with Jackie Chan and with Will Smith's son. That's the one I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if I care to, but especially Karate Kids 1 through 3 are, to me, all-time classics,
mm-hmm.
and this show does not disappoint in any way, and it'll subvert all your expectations in bizarrely, in super satisfyingly. So I recommend
Don't set the bar too high here.
I am. I'm saying it's super high. I recommend everyone subscribe to YouTube Red, get the free trial. I'm going to cancel it before I have to pay the $10. You know, Sonya hasn't seen all the episodes yet.
I'm enjoying it, though. It's
yeah.
good, but... Okay.
No, you're really enjoying it. You had a big smile on your face because you're a big Karate Kid fan too. We recently rewatched.
But like the way you're setting it up is like it's not like all the acting is amazing. It's not like all the writing mm-hmm. is super amazing. Like,
it, okay.
Like, it's good. It's a very enjoyable show.
It's a show that has, it's better than it had any right to be.
Okay.
All Let's right. put it that way. And I just, like I said, I love the Karate Kid movies. They're super enjoyable.
So. I think, like, what it holds on to from the movies is a lot of, like, how do I say it? Like the genuineness mm-hmm. that you've, like, see in, like, the Daniel character in the movies.
Yeah.
Like, you get that out of a lot of the actors in the show.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's something very relatable because they just seem so, like, earnest.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, and I don't want to keep talking about it, but just okay. a solid recommendation from the X-Men Test podcast for Cobra Kai.
Fair enough.
Great show. Okay, that's all I have. I want to encourage viewers to join our Facebook group, X-Men Test Podcast. Join some lively discussions we've been having there lately. I want everyone to follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson, if you're so inclined. Rate and review us 5 stars on whatever podcast device you use. I guess, like I said, usually it's through iTunes, though I have been able to read the iTunes reviews through my Android phone. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly all the same. Sonia, any last parting words of wisdom for our happy fans out there?
The end days are near.
The end game is near.
Oh, sorry, the end. I fucked it up.
That's okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night.